Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode. I'm so excited to have this week's guest. I lovingly refer to him as Dentistry's funny guy, Mike Dottola.
Thank you.
Mike, how you doing, man?
Good.
Is it okay for me to call you Dr. Mike Dottola?
Why would you?
It's not like you've done dentistry in a little bit.
Oh, right? Yeah, it's a good point. It has been a couple of years, but no, they let you like keep your license, and as long as you still attend, you know, CE courses,
and then they let you count your lectures as your hours.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that, but I've always still like been involved with taking classes and been involved with it peripherally enough, and even sometimes doing like hands-on courses on study models, or doing sometimes going out to DSOs, right. like a group of maybe 5 or 10 practices. Mm-hmm. I can think of a couple in New York where, you know, they can't really put together their own CE program, so they right. have half the dentists come on one day and half come on
another day,
and just, you know, teach stuff.
Like they didn't want to close the offices.
They didn't want to close all the offices down. And well, just kind of like teach the reverse preparation technique. And the funny thing is about those DSOs, it's like the age of the dentist, you know, there's a lot of like 27 to 30 year olds.
Right.
And then a lot of like 62 to 65 year olds who don't want the stress of owning a practice, or maybe sold their practice and got right. bored and they came back. So, yeah, it's really interesting. There's nobody like in the.
There's nobody my age
in
or
the
your
power
age
zone.
In there.
Yeah. It's like, you know, people who have only done maybe 10 crowns to graduate right. or since they got out of school, and then people who have been doing it kind of the same way for a long time and aren't really sure if this is
their
conia stuff.
And they're prepping all gold type
margins
anyway.
Yeah, everything's
anyway.
Got like a feather edge margin with a bevel on it. But interestingly enough, I'm making an entrance back into dentistry
Dude,
again.
That's good.
This is one of the weird after effects of COVID is that, you know, on March 13th, when the NBA shut down and then everything else basically shut down, there was probably 40 lectures coming up that year that canceled, and then a bunch of lectures this year as well. And, you know, I had just been doing the lectures and doing some other video projects for people, and it was not quite enough to keep my brain, you know, stimulated all the time. And then when the lectures canceled and it turned to all Zooms, my brain really started going nuts because it's not – this is the first in-person interview I've done with somebody in a long time, and the energy is just
– Well, it's – and people like me and you, we thrive on reaction and interaction, and it drives us, you
right.
know. And then Zoom is, I would argue, mentally exhausting for people like us, because then we have to amp it up to make ourselves
right.
– to just keep us engaged. And doing it.
And still no one's paying attention.
Yeah.
So like one of the things I've noticed doing these webinars is that you get questions that you would never get otherwise. And it's just clear. And it's something you said three times.
Right.
So in an in-person lecture, nobody would ever ask this because...
they're focused.
Yeah, even if you're kind of zoning out a little bit, as soon as the speaker starts to walk up and down the aisle or do or tells a joke that re-engages your attention, you're at least going to hear these things. But people are asking questions of something I've said three or four times. But, you know, speaking about energy... we'll talk a little bit more later about why I'm here, why I'm out,
right, sure.
My triumphant return to North Carolina after a number of years. But
after hibernation from the state.
Talking about energy, the very excellent Aaron Elliott was speaking today, who I haven't seen in a long time speak, and really only saw her for like a short program and a short talk.
You only got 15 minutes with her?
Yeah, and now I've had a day and a half, and I liked it, and I want more. And you came up and you gave part of it as well, sure, kind of your real world thing. But my takeaway story, we will talk about it more, but my takeaway story is afterwards where we were sitting in, if people haven't seen the 3D Dentist Lodge, it's a sight to behold. It's like, hey, 3M and Waniwak, you know, that's been pushed to the side. Okay, it's not quite the same.
I don't have a private jet to bring people in.
No, but you have a Cadillac Escalade.
that's
like for a dentist, that's almost
we,
good.
We give people the wrapper treatment.
Right. It is an Uber-free zone. Yes. I noticed some people today who couldn't get home because... if you're coming out, do not pack large suitcases for this day and a half course.
Uber won't take you.
Yeah, not in North Carolina. But afterwards, we went back into the lodge, and you and I and Aaron were sitting there. And Aaron got this amazing phone call about her son saving someone's life. Who cares? That happens every day. And and she said, T-Bone was talking, and Aaron said, shh, be quiet. You have to have this phone call. And she started talking to her son and played it on a speakerphone. And as soon as you had to stop talking, I looked over 20 seconds later, and you were asleep. And so then Aaron picked up her phone and walked outside to keep talking to her son. And Meredith, who plans your courses, came in and looked and said, is he asleep? And it had been 60 seconds that your eyes have been closed. And I was like, no, it's more that he's ignoring you, expecting you to laugh. Right. Because if I had been sitting there, my eyes would be closed. Somehow you were in like stage three deep sleep after 60 seconds.
Unbelievable.
It's narcolepsy. Is that not narcolepsy? I'd have to ask Dr. Elliott, but...
No, that's just.
How do you lose consciousness so quickly?
It's pure talent.
And how are you still alive? That's never happened in a car?
It has.
Because I was terrified driving over here. You went to turn the heat up, and I'm like, I'm freezing him out. I do not
want to die in this. Is that why you did that?
Yes, I don't want to die in that Escalade.
It would protect you.
Yeah, I was ready to slap you.
I mean, they protected Tiger Woods from the 2-iron. And the fire hydrant.
Yeah, but his... what was that?
The Genesis.
Yeah. How does a guy with generational hand-eye skill, like more coordinated than almost anybody on the planet, this is like his third, maybe, car crash?
Yeah.
It's got to be some, it's sleep deprivation of some way, shape, or form, isn't it? 7 a.m, even if you're texting, when you hit the center divider.
Are you going to?
Aren't you going to hit the brakes or steer something. Or something? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I meant to ask Erin today during her lecture if she thought that was...
She probably like, who's Tiger Woods?
I thought that was sleep. She's pretty athletic. She
college
soccer. She knows who golfers are. But, I mean, so really that's why I'm here, because I've always referred to obstructive sleep apnea and, you know, Glidewell, we've made a lot of snoring appliances. Yeah. And we do make OSA appliances too, but the majority over the years has been, in fact, they just did their 400,000th silent night. I don't think there's a sleep study for any of them.
For 405,000 of the 400,000, there isn't a sleep study.
But the good news is a lot of them, you know, the patient's last name, you know, was the same as the last name of the doctor, because it was usually for the doctor's wife's birthday present.
Right.
He was going to make a silent night for himself and hopefully and stop all the snoring. But, you know, just seeing these appliances, and I had the chance to practice for a couple of years with Dr. Todd Morgan, mm-hmm. who, you know, actually came up in Aaron's lecture. He's done a lot of work towards sleep apnea. Same kind of thing. You know, his dad had an issue kind of like with Aaron's dad. And I've always thought of OSA as kind of thinking man's dentistry.
Yeah.
You know, so we have the thing where we're going to sit and prep and do all these preps, and it's physically taxing, even though it's not like running a marathon, but you're bending over, holding yourself into a position. We all ignored the ergonomics lectures when we were younger.
And we still do this.
And we still do that because what are you going to do, compromise your results, you know, just because I'm hell-bent on doing it in the mirror.
It's just faster. I just want to get done.
Right. But now you have this thing where you've got this area of dentistry where you know, it's thinking, right? It's learning.
It's using your mind.
It's reading these sleep studies, having them obviously diagnosed by a sleep physician, and then a couple, you know, polyvinyl or hopefully polyvinyl or digital impressions.
Hopefully not polyvinyl or
well, okay. And then basically seeding this and interpreting what's happening, or, you know, you guys are both very good about delegating this to a sleep champion. So they're able to deliver these devices, but it's not, you know, nearly as taxing. And, you know, it feels more like thinking, you know, quote unquote, thinking man's dentistry, where you're kind of doing it with your brain more than that. So, you know, I want to be able to bring this, you know, when I go back into practice, I want to be able to do that and add things like aligners as well, and certainly do some restorative dentistry. So that's why I came out when I just happened to interview Aaron the other night for a now disappearing podcast.
Unbeknownst to you.
I literally just did the world's shortest podcast. You know, it had a good 6-episode run, and now apparently they're all gone.
It's been cancel cultured.
Yeah, exactly. That's a huge shot to my heart. Like, those were really, you know, doing anything important for me, but I got to interview some fun people. But, you know, I had talked to Aaron, and we talked a little about obstructive sleep apnea, and I said, yeah, I'm going to start practicing, and I'd love to, you know, love to do that. When's your next course? She's like, next weekend. And I was like, okay, I think I can move some things.
Well, I'm not really lecturing, so I'm pretty sure
I can move that one Zoom call that I have. And you were nice enough to say, oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, come out and see what we have. And it was a great course. I stayed... in the lodge, again, the retreat. I don't know if it has an official name. It's the Eagle's Nest.
No, it's the retreat.
The retreat.
We're waiting for our sponsorship, some partnership. It's going to be like NFL stadiums. Like, every year it's going to be the Bank of America Stadium or the something else, Lucas Oil Field.
Sure, why not? You can change it. Nobody's
maybe it's
really
going to be the Bruxier Lodge 1 year. You never know.
The Gold Foil Study Club.
Yeah, maybe.
Lodge. We were talking about that earlier.
The Amalgam.
Going to make a resurgence. Amalgam Polish.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Mike. What you were just talking about, getting back into practice and stuff, it reminds me of the first time I met you, and I've always been chasing you.
That was actually the first question on all of my podcasts, you know, pretty much all of them was, do you remember how we met? And Aaron actually did. Do you remember how we met?
Yeah, we met through Dentaltown. And then you were at the time where at Glidewell, and I wanted to do some lecturing. We wanted to do some photography courses together there. And I remember going to Glidewell in Newport Beach, the lab, and meeting you. And and this was like 2004 or 2005, somewhere in that ballpark. And I remember saying, I want to be like that guy. Okay, right. I want to work in dental Disneyland, as you called it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, I want that. I want to do that. And then you went to work for Sirona doing what I was like, God. This guy just keeps going to all the places. I want to do that. And then I'm chasing you. And now you're going back into practice, and I'm trying to get out of practice. So I'm thinking, the first thing when you told me that I'm getting back into practice, I'm like, there's something I'm missing. Because I keep chasing this guy around because that's what I want to do. And now he's going back into what I'm trying to get out of to a certain degree. And I'm like, man, what's going on?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Well, you have to imagine, that you haven't been in private practice for the last, you know, 20 years.
Right.
Of course, I was seeing patients while I was at Glidewell, but that was, you know, so it's been, I don't know.
5 years?
Yeah, three or four.
Yeah, 4 years.
4 years probably since then. And so looking at it now and, you know, the opportunity to purchase a practice now with not only the experience, but more of the connections that sure. I made with people like you.
And the industry.
And Aaron and people who are just willing to help out in any way, shape, yeah. or form, because hopefully I've helped them at one point. Or we've done something together in the past and they're just super nice people. It's a really different perspective than buying a practice right when you get out of school where you have to, because this is how you're going to make a living and you're kind of terrified about it. And for me, it's coming in with a kind of a whole new set of eyes, and it's just a new challenge. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel all that different from buying any kind of business. It just happens to be this one that
is there any fear
I do
involved
know something
in this?
About. There's no, I can't say there's really any fear, just because of the way it's going down. I'm buying a practice where it's had somebody in there for a long time who is staying.
Okay.
And so I'm just coming in and adding on to that by doing things that they're not doing now, like sleep obstructive apnea. Sleep apnea yeah. and like aligners. And so I would be terrified if I bought like a $2 million practice and it's like, all right, Monday morning, let's hit the, what do we got? We got 8 preps scheduled.
So you're not in practice. You probably wouldn't be in roller skate practice shape at that point in time.
Exactly.
Like I me and Aaron joked about, we have to get back into speaking shape.
Right.
You know, because, you know.
It's true. Those first ones are rough.
Yeah.
They're a little rusty.
You know, getting back into holding attention for a day or two and all of those things is, it's definitely not easy.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah, you got to shake off the rust a little bit, and you just feel it when you're lecturing every Friday. It's just like, okay, you know, I'm on top of my game. I'm so comfortable with this that when I'm up there, new lines are just coming out spontaneously. If I had a better work ethic, I would record this lecture, re-listen to it, write those down, and add it to the stories. But I'll just wing it because the bar is pretty low. In dentistry, but there is that.
God,
that
were you inside my brain?
And the other thing is like, okay, I haven't done Crown and Bridge for 4 years. I haven't done a direct composite for the 15 years before that either. Now I know direct composites aren't super difficult, and it's not like, you know, the sectional matrix game has passed me by and I can't get in anymore, but I guess I do feel that way. You know, I guess I did feel that way watching all you guys starting to place your own implants and mill your own abutments. And I was so heavily focused on traditional Crown and Bridge at Glidewell, and then they hired other doctors who were doing the implant thing, that I did always feel like this looks like it would be fun, you know, being able to, you know, do your own guides and being able to kind of be a super dentist where you're doing more dentistry on fewer people and this more meaningful stuff like implant dentistry. So I think in that respect, I was a little bit jealous. And then once, you know, I started doing just consulting for companies, if a company gets bought by another company, well, like Dentsply buying Serona, all of a sudden your job can disappear.
Or it's in jeopardy, and there's that uneasiness of the unknown.
Yeah, and when COVID hit, like all consulting contracts went away.
Right.
Not just for 3 months, because the companies were hurting for a while after that too, and they're not sure when they can afford that.
And they don't want to pay until they're confident and certain that it's coming back, and or they may not come back because they found a new way.
Yeah.
There's been some level of disruption, and they may have found a new way to continue to make
so
things work.
It's kind of a luxury for them to have somebody to help create content. Right. Whereas with, you know, really, I mean, Dentsply Serona is the one big example. They're tied to putting on this big meeting every year because it's such a huge sales opportunity for them that it'd be crazy not to have
and
it.
It's phenomenal PR.
Yeah. But everybody else is getting very slowly back into that, and so it's more, you know, kind of hit and miss. So even if you have your own consulting business, it can go away, and then you're constantly trying to find new clients to replace the old ones. It's not, and so, you know, having the dental practice and being in it as much or as little as you want to is good, and then just really to be of value as a consultant or a KOL, it's really nice to be able to use the products that you talk about. So I just never stopped talking about ones that I had used, but obviously new ones have come out, and I have no way. I'm too honest. I'm not going to say, oh, I'm use this in my practice.
I can think of a lot of speakers that would do that. But you know what you just said. I think the takeaway point, it's very relevant, and I know we joke a lot, and we try to be funny, but there's some seriousness to this, is that your dental practice is a known commodity that is a forever level of income.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, it really reminds me of something that I saw with my parents. I always wondered why we kept our cockroach motel. Mm-hmm. And now it makes sense, because no matter what happened anywhere else, we could always go back to the cockroach motel with the apartment complex and doing rooms and everything and make a living. And so no matter what goes on, even through the depths of 2008, 2009, dental practices survived.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot to be said about chasing the Insta-famous, the fake book, the, oh, I want to be the influencer and all of that. But you need something that's stable on the back end to continue to fund your life. And then to be an influencer, to a certain degree, you have to be doing things so that you can maintain relevancy.
Right. So, yeah. So I made a huge mistake when I was at Glidewell, and I never developed, you know, my social media channels. But when, you know, we started in maybe 2006 or seven, started putting clinical videos on YouTube with zero subscribers. Last time I checked, Glidewell's got like 92,000 subscribers.
In dentistry, that's a big number.
The biggest.
Yeah.
I'm not sure anybody who's, there's no manufacturer that comes even close to that. But, you know, props to Jim Glidewell for, I mean, I was a luxury. You know, a lab doesn't need to have a full-time dentist on staff.
What amazes me about Glidewell, and I don't, this is a sandbox maybe, but what amazes me about Glidewell is lean and mean, beating billion-dollar companies at those things. Like, why is Glidewell, or any lab, let's say, beating a multi-billion-dollar entity at how many subscribers they have on social media? And most of marketing today is done through social media.
But you know what? I have to correct you there. Glidewell is not lean and mean. Jim always has 10% more employees.
Well, when I say lean and mean, what I mean by that, it's not a hierarchical structure where you have to, like, he can just make decisions and go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I got to ask the board if I can do this. I got to ask legal. I mean, I joke about how I'm HR for my practice. Right. Jim Glidewell is legal and HR and all of these things. And maybe that's somewhat true, not true.
Right. But, it was. not so much anymore.
Right.
But we were talking earlier today about why don't companies value podcasts?
Yeah.
Glidewell valued these clinical videos. We were sending them out back.
DVDs.
We're getting AOL discs in the mail, and AOL, you're getting DVDs.
Exactly.
Super expensive to send these out with no promo code on it to use it again, just on faith that maybe this is going to help a dentist. Yeah. Maybe this will improve the image of the lab, which I think really happened. In the 15 years that I was there, where it was just known for mail order. And then 15 years later, it's the technology leader. And a lot of that's Jim's commitment to it. Investing in that stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's no, find another dental company that has a dentist working for them, let alone, you know, doing these
and they're multi-billion dollar companies that make all like Glidewell to a certain degree doesn't make in the mouth. I mean, I know they make lab restorations, but in like these big companies make bonding agent, they make composite restorations, they make materials, ancillary equipment. And yet a lot of them don't have a dentist leading them. I don't want to say leading them, giving them guidance.
Yeah, just a committee of one.
Yeah.
Just somebody to say, I don't think dentists are going to go for this, or this is a problem dentists don't have. What we're trying to solve right here is I don't think it's going to help anybody. And sometimes I was right. Sometimes I was wrong. Sometimes I got outvoted. I pushed really hard to have the more aesthetic version of Bruxer be Bruxer Anterior because I really wanted to communicate to dentists where, you know, we wanted this 5Y material used. It didn't have the flexural strength of the 3Y full strength Zirconia. We got to tell them, and they're like, oh, we want to do Bruxer aesthetic. I'm like, no, we got to tell them where to use it in the name and make sure they know this isn't the full strength stuff so they don't start using it in the posterior. Yeah. It breaks, and then it gets, the whole brand gets a bad reputation.
Then so it I finally
won that argument. And then I would go on and do lectures, and I would talk about Bruxer Anterior, and, you know, about halfway through it, Dennis Han would go up, and I go, yeah. And he go, can we use Bruxer Anterior in the posterior? And I was like, oh, God, it didn't work. They were right. We're telling you where to use it. Can I?
Wait, say that again. Maybe the problem is he thought molars were anterior teeth from dental school.
Well, that's, and then I came back and I said, we should name it Bruxer, not in the posterior. Yeah. We should not, like, make them have to come to a conclusion about what we're saying.
Bruxer 5 through 12.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that's just an example of Jim. I mean, a huge marketing department there. I mean, think about just the video department. Four full-time videographers working on stuff for the lab, and then James just shooting and editing all the clinical stuff and the case of the week and Chairside Live. I mean, it was a huge luxury to have that. And that's really what you wanted with that job was the ability to sit down. And, of course, you have to film everything, and that's the problem, because when you pick and choose a case to film and say, oh, this is going to be great for a lecture,
it may not
It's usually a kiss of death. And if you really want a case to go right on somebody you love, you know, like a family member, don't film it. It'll turn out perfect. And you go, oh, my God, I can't.
You know, it's interesting because I was asking you in the car ride, how do I make it so I can just record everything I do? Because the best teaching moments as an education person come from places I didn't plan. Like, oh, I expect to take this tooth out. It's going to be simple. I have no need to record that. Oh, shit, it's missing the buckle plate. Now we got to go in there. God, I really wish.
We learned that early, and we recorded every patient, everything we did, and then you would just pick and choose from, you know, what. That's how I got better as a dentist, was seeing my stuff up on a huge screen going, those are ugly
margins.
When
I got my CEREC machine, you know, I have, actually, and then I want to move forward a little bit, is I used to show in my lectures how I became a better dentist when my crown prep from Glidewell Dental Lab was rejected from them for not being good enough for them to make a crown on it.
Really?
Yeah. I'll have to see if I can find it so I can show it to you.
Oh, I'd love to tell you that was a prank, and I did that just as a, I did that as a joke. That's weird to say that because, you know, some of the best preps we see come in there are from doctors who were doing chairside cancer.
No, this was before I had chairside.
Oh, got it. Okay, got it.
This was before I had chairside.
Yeah, because, you know, that cures that problem. When you have to be your own laboratory technician, doctors who get, really the fastest way, T-Bone, in my mind, you said earlier today, why do people come to our courses who don't have any, you know, who don't have at least a digital scanning unit? But my, you know, answer for me and answer for other people about the fastest way to become a better clinical dentist is to get involved with digital technology. Because when you blow your preps up, it's like posing naked next to a ruler. You know, you can come up with whatever excuse you want, but the truth is right there. And what you're, so that's the prep? Well, that's a clear margin, right?
Yeah. I look at this and I'm so embarrassed.
I mean, it's kind of a, is it a full crown?
It's a full crown on a
premolar. Okay, well, that's totally under reduced. Oh, that's a premolar?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah, okay. That's, I mean, that's that distal margin, that's super, that shoulder times two is tough. That is a little pointy on the mesial lingual, too. And so, yeah, so that's exactly what my preps used to look like. And so when I started putting them up, you know, onto the screen, I mean, that's why I had to figure out, okay, if I use a round burr to prep this gingival margin, at least I can get a uniform margin. And so I had to, like, prep by numbers.
Of it.
Oh my God, that is
it's embarrassing.
So look, so there's diamond marks on that.
No, those are carbide marks.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course. It's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Those are carbide marks? I guess so. They're not cross cut. But then it looks like there's a couple of marks where it looks like you took a rounder and slammed it on. I'll give you this, though, with the exception of, I can't tell if that's a mesial margin can't see the sulcus. No, I see that shelf that you have there, but yeah, right there. I mean, decent. Did you pack cord? Was it two cords or one cord?
No, I'm pretty sure I didn't use cord.
Okay.
I figured Glidewick will just find the margins.
Well, I do think laboratory technicians are better trimming those things than dentists are, because as dentists, if they sent that back to you to trim that margin, you would trim the die to look like how you wanted it to look in the mouth. Whereas a technician takes it and goes, all right, I'm just going to trim this dog shit, you know, where it goes. So at least there's something that kind of fits on there. Yeah, and I don't know how retentive that prep was. So let me ask you, one of the questions I like to ask when I interview people is, have you ever had a patient swallow a crown or swallow anything?
You know, I got to be honest with you. It's been a very long time. I haven't had it happen in private practice, but I had it happen senior year of dental school. And there was like a month and a half left in school. And my lady swallowed my gold crown that I needed to meet the requirement for gold crowns. So I paid her to go through her poop so I could get it and actually cement it so I could meet the requirement for dental school.
I don't even know if that's legal today. Can you pay someone to go through their own poop? It feels like a bad scat porn video. I feel like you get sued for it.
It's what it took to make it happen, right?
What was it? It was probably like a $180 crown.
No, dental school fees. No. Yeah. You know, maybe dental school fees. Like, right. I got you. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But you know, we had to make the model, and I probably prepped it 6 months earlier. Right. It took me that long to pour the model, to section it, to ditch the dye, and get it to the laboratory. Right. And then you know they made it high, and I think they purposely made it bad so that you learn how to adjust. And then 6 months later, it's probably worse. And then who knows if the patient even had a temporary still?
And had it been in private practice, Glidewell does have a no-fault remake policy, so it actually doesn't matter.
They would have remade that crown.
They would have. Yeah, they absolutely would have. And then obviously today with digital technology, it'd been super easy for them to.
Yeah, and the good news now is with the digital technology, the crown would have been back in 3 days.
And so really nobody in private practice has swallowed anything since?
I've been very fortunate. Now you know it's going to happen next week.
So. Right, so we'll have to do an update. Yeah,
but more than likely they'll swallow an implant at this point. You know, I'm not doing a lot of traditional restorative dentistry at this point. Some, but not a ton. So, yeah.
I also like to ask people about the First Life concert that they saw. I feel like it's a, I don't know. It kind of says, it's usually slightly embarrassing, and it usually says something about somebody's I feel like you can tell a lot about their leanings.
Yeah.
Like you know, Aaron's last week was really great.
What was hers? So I can.
Well, Aaron's gorgeous and vivacious, and really big on interpersonal reactions. And I'm sure you know how men are. I'm sure a lot of the men she talked to are just like, I think she likes me, dude. I think she likes me. And but she's really very conservative. When you talk to her about how she grew up and even her dating history, it's God. I hope my daughters did as well as Aaron did. But her first concert was Amy Grant.
Oh, very.
And so you're like, okay, religious. Yeah, right? Exactly. Christian. Yeah. It wasn't, you know, Motley Crue. Yeah. You know, it wasn't Black Sabbath or Ozzy or anything like that. So what's yours?
My first concert I went to in my life was 1993. I went to I say Gwen Stefani concert, but it wasn't. I think she was with a band or
No
something.
Doubt.
No Doubt.
Yeah, of course. So we went Orange to County's own No Doubt from Anaheim, California.
So we went to that and. What was amazing, I was so excited to go to this concert. I'm not even sure I knew who No Doubt was, to be quite frank with you. I just had a lot of doubt about who No Doubt was. Yeah, I just wanted to go to a concert because I wasn't allowed to go to concerts growing up.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because
tell me about your are you Indian American? Is that what we say?
We're just brown. I'm brown. I'm from India. I mean, okay. I'm Indian, like from India, you know, dot, not feather.
But so. you moved here when you were like, like 2 years old.
So I'm as white as you are, pretty much. I'm sorry, let me back up. I'm as American as you are.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not as, you kept saying today what a translucent dentist you were. You're like, oh no, transparent.
Transparent,
you weren't saying translucent. You were saying transparent because you do tell everybody the truth. And actually brought your staff member up and had a really honest conversation about how you made her so angry by, you know, thinking that you were going to hire a sleep apnea superstar. Like you had to go outside your practice to find Michael Jordan. And it was funny because as you told that story, I was thinking about pro teams that try to assemble all these superstars together. It never works because there's no chemistry.
It rarely works. Right.
And so what you ended up doing was then, you know, that didn't work and you promoted from within. And now you've got this, you've created your own Michael Jordan, who didn't start in college here in North Carolina. Yeah. Scottie Pippen, still, that's pretty good, too.
I mean, I'm the Michael Jordan. Just, I'm kidding. We all know
who's got the vertical leap in the office. But tell me about growing up like in an Indian family, because I'm sure it was different then.
I've got so many stories. Are you kidding me?
Well, tell me the best and the worst thing, maybe.
Okay.
so, you couldn't go to concerts. I know that.
Yeah, like, so I couldn't go to concerts because bad things happen at concerts. Mm-hmm. Or they, my parents assume, because they've never been to a concert either. Right. So
we're talking sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Kind of
whatever. Okay. Who knows? You're just talking to other Americans. So they're like, you can't go to them because you might interact with other Americans. No, and my parents weren't that racist. But so I will tell you the worst story I remember. It's very embarrassing, actually, but it's looking back, it's funny. I remember I wasn't allowed to have a car. Mm-hmm. So when I became 16 and I was finally allowed to go out with my friends, and I always had a curfew of 9 o'clock. You know, in college, when I come home, I'm like my senior year of dental school. I'm coming home to visit my parents and I'm going out with some friends. And my mom, like, you know, you have to be home by 9 o'clock. I'm like 23 years old. And she's like, yeah, you have to be home by 9 o'clock. What the hell? But nonetheless, I remember a friend of mine came and picked me up once, and he was kind enough to come to the door, you know, and everything. And then the second time he came to pick me up, he honked from the driveway, and I'm like, hey, dude, you know, my mom, you know, my parents are weird. They want to make sure I'm actually going with who I said I'm going to. So you got to come up. He goes, dude, last time we came to your house, it smelled, you know, like not us. And, right. And so I prefer to just come from the driveway. So I'm like, so, you know, growing up in a small town as a foreign person, people can call it racism. I just call it, we're different.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I always had the attitude that people shouldn't conform to me. I should conform to the environment I'm in. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe I don't know.
I shouldn't even comment on this as a white guy.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't.
Because
<don't.
laughs> we've had things pretty good our way here in America for the last couple hundred years. Well, did you guys like go on vacations?
No. We owned a motel, so if we really couldn't leave. So if we ever went on vacation, we went to visit family. And so to this day, I take vacations now because it's funny you bring up vacations. I got to share a story, okay? Now when we go on vacation, it's my wife that forces us to go.
Right.
And my absolute not favorite
place. Can I interrupt?
Yes.
She's Indian as well?
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Of course.
Were her parents not as insanely strict as yours?
No, but her dad was much more, he was probably a black sheep of the Indian, normal Indian personalities. Mm-hmm. And they were physicians, but they didn't grow up in a 24-hour business.
Got it.
You know, like the motel business is 24-7. Yeah, it's a family-run operation, or the one we had was. So we were 24-7 there. But my absolute non-favorite place to go is Disney World. Mm. And
I hear you, brother.
There's lots of things about Disney in general, let's call it, or theme parks. So recently, because in the pandemic, there's not so many places you can go. You can't go international, a lot of different things. So we have a tendency to go to Florida. And so we've been going to visit my mother-in-law. And my wife was like, you know, we've done that 3 times now. Let's do something different. And so she said, how about we go to Orlando? And I was like, God, like, I don't want to go to Orlando. And because I hate waiting in lines. I hate the insane amount of money that it costs to go. So so to make it easier for me, Mona never lets me buy the tickets or any of that because I can promise you I won't go.
And she's a psychiatrist. She's
done well. We've done well.
Right.
You know, money's not necessarily the issue.
But she kind of has her own money she has access to where you don't actually even see it.
She reminds me of that. She holds that in my face.
Did you guys do the VIP experience where you get to go to the...
So here we go. Okay.
Oh, I don't want to step on your story.
This is what happens, okay? So when we go, we're a family of five, me, my wife, and our 3 kids, and we almost always take somebody else with us, whether it's my parents or friends or whatever it is, because we just like to have somebody take care of the kids pretty much.
we'll trade you this free trip where you think you'll be free, but you won't. You'll be babysitting
exactly.
Your kids.
So we're a family of seven, essentially, at this point, right? So Disney World is $140 per person to get in the park,
right,
not including parking and all that BS that goes with it. And I nonstop, my wife knows I drive. I don't like to be driven around, or I don't like her to drive me around. And so we get there, and I'm already bitching about, why do we have to pay $25 to park here? And then she goes, well, it's cheap compared to what we paid for the tickets. And I'm like, what do you mean? How much do we pay for the tickets? And she goes, well, they're $140 a person. I'm like, so I did the math real quick. I'm like, that's $980. Right? I'm like, holy smokes. And then she goes, well, you know, it's fine. We'll go in. It's COVID. They won't be very busy. The lines will be short. We'll get the rides done, and we'll be out of here in a few hours. Sure enough, we go there, and it's, quote, unquote, 30%, 40%, 50% capacity. The lines are 80 minutes, 90 minutes long. And like clockwork, I complain and start complaining about the line, saying, I just don't want to do it. How much is the VIP experience?
Right.
And so I go up to the little, because they're selling the VIP experience everywhere because they're smart sales.
Oh, really? Company. Oh, like, it used to be like an off the menu, like an In-N-Out Burger thing.
I'm called Fast Pass. I call that the VIP experience, okay? The Express Fast Pass.
Oh, no, there's one more expensive than that, though. I'll tell you about in a minute. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm familiar with that. I did that in Legoland.
Okay.
But anyway, there it was fine, I guess. So we went there, and I went to the lady, hey, how much does this Express Pass cost? She goes, oh, it's $235. I'm in my mind, I'm going, well, I already paid $145, so I guess $60, $70 more is okay. So I go, times seven, I'm like, God, that's a lot of money. But, you know, like, all right, it's $400. I don't have to listen to the bitching and moaning. And
From
myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much. And I go, all right, I'll do it. I'll take seven, and the lady goes, that'll be $1,500. I'm like, well, I already paid $140 of the $230. She goes, no, it's $230 additional per person. Okay. So I absolutely say, you're out of your mind. So I absolutely say, no, we can't do this. Okay. So then I go back to my wife and I go, listen, I'm not doing
it. It was sold out.
No, I just say, I said, Mona, why did you even let me go there? You know good and well I'm not going to spend that kind of money, because I just don't believe in it. She goes, oh, no problem. So unbeknownst to me, she had there's a value in having friends, right? So she had asked her friend to write a letter, a medical letter, that said that I had rheumatoid arthritis, which I do, that I was unable to walk, and that I suffer from heat affliction, some kind of thing. And she made me go back to the front of the park and go to the medical department and get a handicap deal where you can get automatically, don't have to wait in line. So now I have to go there so I can get this thing. And then if you're handicapped, well, I don't know the correct term for it, your whole family gets Fast Pass essentially for free.
Right.
But I'm not handicapped, clearly, right? I'm like, oh, my God, this is so bad. I feel so bad, blah, blah, blah. And she makes me do this. And then then she makes me say, listen, you have to walk like you have a problem. So you have to kind of play the part. And then the next thing you know, she goes, I've went ahead and rented you a scooter over there so that you can ride around in a scooter so it looks real.
Like one of these ones at the supermarket.
Yeah, so I go over there, give him my $50, and she makes
Did you fake the limp on the way over there?
Yeah, of course. Okay, so she makes me ride around in a scooter at Disney World so that the kids could get a free Fast Pass. So now I've gotten my $1,500 Fast Pass for $50 plus the letter from our friend, right?
Right, and a lifetime of shame about it.
Here's the rule. I said, all right, I'll do this, but you cannot take a picture of me. It's not funny. I don't want to do this. Just don't take a picture of me.
You're taking one for the team.
I'm clearly and what's so sad is she goes, I mean, didn't your parents do this? I'm like, yeah, they did the one time we went to Disney World. And she goes, yeah, my dad used to do it all the time because, he would never pay $1,500 or whatever it was, equivalent at
exactly,
the time.
Right.
So anyway, we're going through, and about 2.5 hours later, I get a text from my Patterson rep saying, really? And then I'm like, and then I can see the wheel spinning. And then next thing you know, there's a picture of me on this scooter.
Oh, God. And your Patterson rep was at...
No. He said, one of my other clients just texted me this. And I'm like, oh, my
Hashtag T-bone rolls or something like that and doesn't walk.
So I'm like, oh my God. So then I get irate and I go to Mona and Meredith, who's with me at the time. She was our babysitter for the trip and for the kids. And I go, which one of you sent this picture to Chuck? Which one of you did it? I said, this is not funny. And they go, we didn't do it. So apparently some, and by the way, we're wearing masks, right? Some dentist had recognized me and followed me around saying, that can't be him, and took a picture of me in the stupid scooter and sent it to Chuck. And I'm like, oh my freaking God, this, I'm so embarrassed that, you know, here I am, the guy with successful practice, speaker, all this stuff. So in one story, I'm
that's not the worst of it. The worst of it is you, like, you know, play. I'm surprised you guys didn't have a handicapped parking spot out front.
I mean, because if I had gone through all of this, I would have done that too.
I know.
I mean, why even have to walk three quarters across the parking lot?
Just saying, if there's an afterlife, I don't know what you're going to do for a living in the next one, but it's going to be like sewer related.
So it is embarrassing, but yet a humble brag in one little story, because the embarrassing part is that I actually went through with this to save some money, of course. And then the humble brag is that I got recognized in Disney World. Right. And I like that
you think that you having a mask on would make you unrecognizable. I mean, you're just like, just the outline of you, the silhouette of you.
By the way, those carts don't go more than 1.5 miles per hour.
Right. Well, you thought this was going to be like a performance model that you were getting?
I thought it was going to be awesome. Like, oh, I'm going to just zip around, all these things.
Oh, wasn't your self-esteem like...
Hey, listen, why are you rubbing it in?
Did you, at any point, did you have like, did you get a coffee and have a coffee cup and somebody walked by and put a dollar in like at one point?
Because I did that at 2016 Sirona World. One of our buddies, one of the sales reps, had a cast because he broke his leg or something. So he had one of those things. So I rode around and that thing was fast. And I went around jiggling my cup, looking for donations. I'm going to die in hell for all of this. I'm sure of it.
You know, there was a Simpsons episode where Homer sees somebody in a wheelchair and he's just so angry with himself. He goes, God, like a sucker, I've been using my legs this whole time. But yeah, so you saved a ton of time, I guess, in these lines.
Yeah, because what's even better is I didn't have to go in the line anymore. Because part of the problem with the 70-minute line isn't that I'm even, like, I'm going to ride the ride. I don't ride any rides. Is that my wife won't let me let the kids stand in the line alone for 70 minutes, so I have to stand with them, get to the front of the line, and then walk myself out. So with the Fast Pass, I don't even have to do that. I just literally walk
up. They actually wheel you into the back of the ride, right? Don't they wheel you into the exit?
No. But the beauty of it is I just went up to the Fast Pass line as the handicap and say, my kids would like to go. And the kids went.
Oh, so you didn't even go on, the ride.
I just wheeled around.
Oh, see, I was hoping you got out and then had to do the limp, like into Space Mountain, and then you'd limp on the way out.
Oh, no.
Great example you set for the kids there, by the way. Too.
Well, listen, I want them to keep some. So I believe that, I guess I'm first generation. And my
wait. So is that thing you just did right there, is that more Indian or is that more American?
What?
Pretending to be handicapped to save money.
Indian.
Oh, the Indian. Okay.
Yeah, that's what very Indian.
Okay.
Very
I couldn't
Indian.
Tell if that was like American ingenuity or where that, what culture that
like,
was
like
from.
Growing up, we used to bring food to Disney World so that because, dude, have you seen what they charge?
I paid $11 for a churro.
Not us.
And a Mickey Mouse ice cream
Indian
sandwich.
Indian food. And I can't remember if at the time... My parents would say, tell them that you only eat religious food, and that's why we have this, so that we wouldn't, like, because at the time, they wouldn't let you bring it in.
Your own food.
You had to eat and drink at the park, so we would bring it in, and we'd bring, like, water in, and be like, we only drink religious water.
That's
it's
so
unbelievable.
Religious water. So that even way. Catholics don't bring holy water in to drink it. You know, we've done a fair amount of speaking together back in the Sirona days, and it was... It was really great, you know, some of those times where we're on those multi-speaker lineups. And so you've been doing a ton of dates for years, too. I'm wondering if you have a best day as a speaker. And I think I might know when it is, but I have no idea, actually. I'm just guessing. And a worst day. I wonder if you have one of each.
Well, you know, one of the benefits of speaking with companies is a good relationship, in my eyes, with working with a company is that when there's a mutual benefit, okay? Yep. So I never got paid to speak at Dentsply Sirona World.
Right.
And maybe others
did. No one did. No, okay, no, 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 no. No one did.
I'm just trying to figure out.
No one did.
Richard Branson didn't get paid? Well,
he got $300,000, yes. But he donated it all to charity.
To his own charity.
Jerry Seinfeld did not. Yeah, but I feel like it was arm's length.
Yeah, sure, probably. I mean, he's a billionaire. Right. I mean, whatever, you know. They deserve it. They've done some amazing things. But one thing I loved about working with Dentsply and continue to work with them to a certain, certainly at a lesser degree now, is that they always, if you performed well and did your part in a sense, they always gave you opportunities. And so my greatest day as a speaker was, I don't remember the date, it was September or October 2019 at Dentsply Sirona World in 2019 in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And they had called me, I remember Adam Bush and Ingo had called me and says, hey, you know, we want to do, as you know, they do a live patient procedure mm-hmm. in the main stage while during the TED Talks are going on. And they go, we really want to do something. And, you know, we've done implants and all of that, but we want to do something a little bit more. And they had pitched me some ideas of like doing a veneer case and all this. I said, listen, do you guys trust me? Here's what I think we can do. I will extract a jaw of teeth, place 6 implants, and put a temporary restoration on in 2.5 hours on live TV in front of 7,000 people. And so my greatest moment was, A, being dumb enough to do it.
Yeah, okay? that's risky.
And then actually being able to execute it. And my only regret with that day is about 2 hours.
Was that I wasn't there. That's true.
Absolutely, it was a regret.
I'm just kidding.
my regret of the day was I had my ending line that I wanted to end everything with, but they ran out of time and cut me off. And what I wanted to tell people was in the time that most people do a single crown, I just did a $30,000 procedure. And that wasn't a saying how great I am. That was me saying, I want us all
to. And you can too.
Right. Sure. And I want us to all understand you can do it. And we want to graduate as we progress in dentistry,
right.
You know, and get out of this rat race that was developed in the 80s and 90s in dentistry of, you know, having dual entry, hopping from chair to chair and doing all of that, that in the same time, there's a reason specialists are the most highest paid within dentistry, because they're doing procedures that get paid at the highest levels. And general dentists can't do that. And technology, more importantly, opens the door for general dentists to do that and achieve things they never thought possible and achieve them at a very high level. So without question, I don't know how I will outdo that. I don't know how.
Those meetings were almost every speaker's top moment. Of course, mine was hosting them, or actually just speaking it at 27 and a half. You know, we were talking about that, and we looked at a minute of it earlier because you wanted to see a picture of what I looked like on stage at that time. And, you know, those were the highlights of a lot of it. So hopefully a meeting comes back you know, live again. I don't know how it couldn't, and hopefully they continue to be able to sell enough stuff there to justify the, you know, $1.5 million entertainment budget they've always had. But that's really where the live surgery came from, because, I mean, how do you top Jerry Seinfeld and One Republic and Imagine Dragon? I mean, how do you top it on the main stage? Yeah, I mean, the TED Talks are good, but you know, the High Wire Act now becomes, and I didn't know at the time, because we were just doing like single tooth implant stuff too. So for you to do that, I would have been kind of worried, but I would have also been, you know, if a couple of things happened, so it was real world and you were kind of, you know, adapting on the fly, to make it work, that could have been, you know, good too, as long as it was, authentic and you know, so you swing for the stars and you end up like a little bit lower. You have a worst day? Any
you know, my worst day was very early in my career, and it's not necessarily funny. It's a real it's not funny. It's a it's a important lesson that sometimes my worst day wasn't the day of speaking, it was the day after, when a couple of the people that hired me to speak had to have a conversation with me about some of the cultural comments I would make that offended people. Mm-hmm. And my initial reaction was, man, who cares? You know, it's just a few people. But ultimately, you don't want to develop the reputation of being insensitive, but you also want to be true to who you are. So that hit me hard to get that, because I felt like honestly, and this kind of gets into God knows what, the first thing I thought of wasn't that, oh, I might lose my position as a speaker or future events. The first thing I thought of was, I probably let my parents down.
I was going to say that for a joke. Yeah. I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, that's the first thing I thought of. Like, my parents would be so disappointed in me.
What was this lecture televised and they might have been watching?
Not that they would be disappointed that they heard about it, right. But that I did that. And my first thought was, God, I've let them down, even though, you know, they don't know about it or whatever it may be. But and that has a lot to do with the cultural differences of growing up in a country as a foreigner or whatever it may be. Right. And look, I love America. I think it's a great country. I hate some of the things it's becoming or has become or whatever you want to say about that. But it's amazing. And at the same time, I think there's a reason immigrants succeed. Number one, we stack the deck in our favor.
Right.
Okay. We typically, the cream of the crop come over. Okay?
Like that story from the song from Hamilton.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
It's just an amazing story about immigrants. We do it, you know, we try harder.
Right. Well, number one, we stack the deck because some of the best of the best come over. Right. Okay. And number two, we have no choice but to survive. Right. And you know, jokingly, and I hope my mom was joking when she would say these things to me. She's like, when I didn't study or something like that, she'd say, you know, you want to grow up to be better than them, right? And
white people?
Just Americans in general.
Okay.
Because, you know, we lived in this, I don't want people to think less of me for these things, or certainly not less of my parents.
Come on, your parents, you know, came over from, they were insanely strict. I mean, it's not, you know, thinking, having these things occur to you in your mind, mm-hmm. and maybe even saying them to your family is just so much different than saying them out loud. Yeah. I mean, it was so crazy. I lived here for 2 years in Charlotte, not in Raleigh, working for Serona and Splice Serona. And, you know, so to come back again, it was interesting to see
the company formerly known as Serona instead of like Prince.
Yeah, well, it was like, you know, I went to work for the coolest company in dentistry, and I felt like they were purchased by the uncoolest company in dentistry. And I don't know that the corporate cultures, you know, would have ever mixed. Yeah. It was oil and water. And so it was so funny to, you know, kind of be back. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's been a long time. And you were nice enough to pick me up at the airport and then make fun of me for wearing a mask outside. I'm like, what? Where are we? But you know, like in California. And then we're driving to this. So you've been, like you said, really successful in dentistry. Yeah. And you've bought this insane retreat where we're having this lecture and everybody's staying if they want the VIP experience. Which, by the way, the course is the course. The course is what happens when you're sitting in the lecture room, this unbelievable garage where this guy used to remodel cars. It's got the coolest vibe I've ever felt in a lecture room. I was cracking up because at the end of the lecture, to open the door at the end of the lecture, you used a garage door opener and the garage. But I mean, this is an insanely nice garage. This guy, the cabinets, everything in there. This guy was
first class.
Absolutely fastidious.
Which is great that somebody else did it, because there's no way an Indian would have spent that kind of money.
No, not at all. There would have been IKEA stuff.
Not even. It would have been stuff we took out of one of our old Holiday Inns.
Exactly. Bed bug infested like a cabinets from the Roach Motel. But you know, so there was the lecture.
Yeah.
But the cool part was, you know, if you do the VIP experience and you're staying in the lodge, is like the conversation that happened afterwards. Because, you know, you are standing up in front of people and you can tell the truth, but it's when you start talking and the attendees start sharing about their practice and their struggle and what's their stopping point and what's happened and what employee it is. And you get this amazing interaction between them. So I'm a huge proponent. If you get the chance to come out and take a 3D class, do it early, sign up early so you can stay in the lodge. And if it's full, I don't know, camp, set up a pup tent on the front lawn or something, or stow away, you know, somewhere in there, or lock yourself in the garage. Yeah. Try to sneak in at night and stay in the room. All the rooms are named. I was in Sinus Lift.
Yeah.
And Sinus Lift, thank you, by the way, very nice, with a private bathroom. No drapes or window covering on the bathroom. So as I'm standing there looking at the garage, I'm like, can they see me? I'm always wondering, like, when I hear people in the hot tub.
How's that any different
than
hotels, where, especially in Vegas, where you can see the other room on the 17th floor
right
across?
Because I was the one being looked at. Yeah. I wasn't with the binoculars doing the looking. But to your point about America, it was so weird to be in this car with you driving back to this, you know, multi-million dollar, you have to call it an estate. It's on a lot of land.
Sure, I wouldn't call it an estate.
Well, if you're from California, that's an estate. Yeah, it's more than a fifth of an acre. And we're driving, and as we're driving about a mile away from there, we both kind of look, and there's a Confederate flag in the front lawn.
And you notice I ducked.
I was thinking, are we okay? I'm fine. I know I'm fine. But I'm in the line of fire from this house to T-Bone. So I'm trying to put my seat back as quick. I pull it and lean back as quickly as I could. And so it's like, well, what would that person think of somebody like you, you know, coming over? I mean, your dad was a dentist in India, which was fascinating. He wasn't when he came over here because of boards. But, you know, having trouble taking the boards but ended up being like a denture tech in an office and doing dental stuff, which ended up inspiring you and your brother, I think, to go into this field. But it's like such a, you know, it was such a weird thing, because I'm so proud of what you've been able to achieve by building this training center of your own and your vision for what you want to do. And it's a little heartbreaking to see a Confederate flag. I mean, it's not very charming.
To me. Well, see, I don't. I think
I can't go, hey, that's America.
No, well, maybe I'm brainwashed. I don't think a Confederate flag stands for racism. And I probably faced
that's
prejudice,
true. That could be a California bias of mine.
I don't look at it that way. I just think that's what they grew up with.
I understand.
And that's okay.
Right.
You know? I don't feel it's a beautiful area, so it's not even unsafe.
Right.
But it's just those kind of things don't, I don't know. Maybe it's just.
That's a good point. I didn't grow up here with that. And so I was always taught this is what it means.
Maybe that is what it means. I don't know personally.
I think if you have one in California, that might be what it means. does feel more organic here.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Maybe I've always just been able to let that stuff hit me and roll right off because it was semi-normal in the time that I grew up here, you know, in the 80s and in rural North Carolina. That was pretty normal, and it just seemed normal to me. But you know, it's like that beautiful video that Jonathan made for me as a speaker intro. My life experience of growing up in my town, in my experience, in my culture, is the exact reason I am what I am today, for good and bad and whatever it is. It is the reason, and I will be forever grateful to my parents, to my family, to all those around me who have allowed me to be what I am today.
Right. Because you wouldn't have without all that volcano of all those forces.
None of us would be, right?
And I look at that too. Like somebody in the sleep course today said, I can never remember my dreams. And everybody was like, oh, I'm like, I can't remember the first 10 years of my life. Were you people oohing and aahing at her not being able to remember?
From last night, you know?
So I literally can't remember anything before about the age of 10. And my aunts, my dad's sisters, have filled me in on things that happened. You know, me being yelled at or hit or whatever that I literally can't remember. But they've seen it. So I believe it's true. One of the things was, you know, my mom used to tie me to the bed because I would sleepwalk. And she tied me because she said the pediatrician said to do this. He was probably joking. It was probably like you. He was like, tie him to the bed. It'll be fine. Yeah. But my aunt said, it broke my heart to see it. She said, I saw the restraints where your mom would tie you to the bed, which explains why, you know, I always have to sleep with one foot out from like under the covers. It's almost like
so you escape.
Yeah, and that's basically why I pulled off the sleep study in the middle, because I felt like I was being strangled by a very weak man just from like the plastic tubes going around there. And so when you say that your first reaction was, my parents would be so embarrassed that this happened at this lecture. I know I'm still like when I was let go from Dance Fly Sirona. I know that the reaction I had, the fight or flight kind of abandonment thing, goes back to that. And I've done talk therapy for probably 8 or 9 years, and I've made a lot of progress. Things have gotten a lot better in my life, so I've kept going. But I've never really been into tap into this thing in my past that I know still causes anxiety in my life today. That can't really be explained.
Or
you know,
people, a lot of people can't understand it even.
Right, right. Yeah. They can't really understand it because it doesn't seem like the circumstances that you're living in would justify this. But when you hear somebody talk about PTSD and things getting wired weird in your brain during this, you know, traumatic event or events that happened, your brain kind of goes on this fight or flight response in the absence of any real threats. And of course, that's anxiety and panic attacks and things like that. And so it doesn't make me. So as a result, sometimes I engage, and it can be for years at a time, in kind of self-destructive behaviors. Nothing is like outwardly obvious as like cutting or anything like that, but it takes the form of like overeating and drinking. Mm-hmm. And so I said this to you, you know, kind of unannounced when we got to the lodge on Thursday night, that I've been struggling for the last 6-9 months to kind of get, I don't want to call it willpower, but just the dedication.
Motivation.
To the motivation to lose the weight again. And I looked back years and years ago when I'd lost like 40 pounds. And it was actually a weight loss contest at Glidewell. And so it was kind of fun that we were doing this together. And then there
wasn't this picture?
There was money on the line. That is, yeah, that's probably before. See those jowls?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that if that guy would have showed up, and I wasn't shaving my head yet, I was just cutting it close. But and that's really where I should be. I've got narrow wrists. I'm not supposed to be big. But had that guy been in the lecture, Aaron would have been using me as a neck example throughout the whole thing. I was like, God, what is, you know, how am I going to find this motivation again? You know, and it kind of occurred to me at the same time I've been thinking about, I don't know if it's my age or what, but I'd rather watch a stand-up comedy special or comedy clips on YouTube or cycling, you know, podcasts or video podcasts on YouTube than really dive into social media. Mm-hmm. It's just hasn't run my motor for whatever reason. But I've also realized that, like I said, I blew it by not, while I was at Glidewell, building
your own brand.
Of course, I've got videos out there that have been seen like 3 million times by Dennis.
So the beauty for you is you can leverage those older videos and you have an acceleration to where you should be.
I have shown that I can create content that is interesting, but you still need, like in the case of Glidewell, that big marketing pipeline to get it out to people. So you have a chance for it to do it if you just kind of put it out on your own. So I was thinking, well, I'd like to find something that really would engage me long-term on social media, just because it's helpful when you're consulting with companies to be able to have a presence or have, you know, people who you can share
things
with. A brand, I guess, even though I don't love how that sounds, and I don't love that to have a brand, you have to have these followers on social media, because it's like, well, wasn't all those 15 years of clinical videos and all that speaking creating a brand? And all of a sudden, that counts for nothing in this new world, and maybe it doesn't. But that's when I came up with, oh, what worked for me in that Glidewell weight loss contest was the accountability.
Right.
Because it wasn't even my money. It was my girlfriend at the time's money. Because no one else would do a $5,000 weight loss contest with me. They're like, oh, wives won't let us do that. I'm like,
make $6 a unit.
Well, no, these were executives.
I'm kidding.
But
not far from the truth, but I'm kidding.
It's like your assistant. Right. They get a base salary that's low, and then they get paid for as many crowns as they make, but they don't get paid for remakes. Right. So it's all about being quick, but not doing a crappy job so that you have to remake it and waste that time. So there was the accountability, because we'd have these weigh-ins. Mm-hmm. And it was also kind of the community or the fellowship that we were kind of doing this together. And we give each other like a hard time when somebody else was like eating a couple extra, whatever, at lunch, because we had lunch together a lot of the days too. And I thought, oh, I should do this weight loss online. Mm-hmm. I should document this and just put it out there, including pictures of me standing without my shirt on, just in shorts, like on the scale and the number, and then like changing to these clean diets and taking pictures. And hopefully when I want to have whatever macaroni and cheese or something like that, it'll be the thought of you know, having to post this, that's going to come in. No, that's too embarrassing. Or maybe I do. And you're go,
letting
oops,
people down.
Oops, slip today. Yeah. And it's just one thing. That doesn't mean it has to be a whole string of defeats. And I thought, you know, and I'd like to start. I've always wanted to start meditating. Like, my parents were kind of hippies in a weird way. They took us to transcendental meditation when we were in eighth grade. And it was just like, it was weird because it was so young and it didn't make sense. And if you put an eighth grader alone in a room for a half hour, you knew what's going to happen. He probably won't meditate. It rhymes with meditate, but he's probably not going, I don't know. At least me, that's how immature.
Wait, so I'm sorry to interrupt. Did you just say your parents took you to a transcendental chair?
That's right. That's right. To the treatment units from Sarana. No, it was a full-on transcendental meditation with the Maharishi Mahesh Yoga. Picture, yogi picture up on the wall like it was, we were with the Beatles. You weren't supposed to tell your mantra to anybody. And my brother and I was like, what's your mantra? And we had the same one. And we were like, oh, this is bullshit. Just did. So we kind of just missed it kind of, cynically. Back in the day, and then I hear Jerry Seinfeld, Howard Stern, all kinds of people saying meditation is what keeps them sane and how powerful it is. And, I struggle with it when I do it, but I can do it. Part of it's because of those first 10 years of my life.
Right.
I'm good at dissociating, I'm not here. Right. And turning off my brain and being able to, maybe not think of anything, but I'm not sure that's what the mindfulness of meditation really is, but I could see you maybe struggling because of your brain moving so quick. In fact, I bet every time you would sit down to meditate, you'd be asleep in 30 seconds.
I would.
Because like Neil Brennan's joke, all T-Bone needs to fall asleep is a bite of a sandwich and a moment of silence.
That's it.
And then the T-Bone's just unconscious. And so I'd like to put that out there as well, that I'm going to start meditating and kind of just put out the journal of doing it, because that will keep me kind of accountable to, like, I said I was going to do this. What I don't want to do is say I'm going to do it and then not. I don't like that idea when I commit to something.
Well, it's about gamifying.
Yeah, basically. It's like gamifying, and it's and so like the exercise things too, just a picture and just kind of sharing it. And then hopefully finding other dentists who want to do this. When I talked about weight loss before on Chairside Live, Dennis would write in and go, hey, man, you look great. I just did my first 10K. I lost 20 pounds. Yeah. I started doing this. And we weren't even really connecting because YouTube was kind of the only thing back then. And so I feel like now it kind of be fun. And so I sat down and I said, I'm going to do this, and I'm gonna tag you on it. And it's not like a competition. It's just like, maybe we can do this together and see who else wants to kind of join this. I always wanted to do this at Sarona World and DS World. I wanted to kind of be like this thing where people come, and we were going to have a ton of fun too, but maybe it could act as a motivation to help people change their lives. So I thought it'd be great to do kind of a Biggest Loser by the office with a huge industrial scale where the whole office gets on the same time so you don't see what anybody weighs. And then again, this is just getting to your ideal weight, whatever that is for you. I mean, it's not about being, super skinny or whatever.
Weight.
Your desired weight, where... For me, it's really clear. I've taken 3 sleep studies before. When I'm overweight, I snore. When I'm at my right weight, I do not snore. I mean, it is for me kind of about, I don't have central apnea.
Well, it's one of the treatments for sleep apnea, lifestyle change.
Right, exactly. And no, everybody would rather just
take a pill
or maybe put a splint in, maybe a CPAP, who knows. And I thought I'd like to share this stuff. And then I thought, you know what? I'd like to also share... my friend, our friend, Josh Austin, has been really open about his struggles with, and he and I, it's one of the things that brought us together. And Josh has talked about going to therapy and stuff like that. And I've really never talked about it. And I think I should talk about this more. And because the talk therapy really hasn't worked, I'd like to do ayahuasca.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I've got a guy. I got a dentist friend of mine who goes once or twice a year, I'll put you in touch with him.
Well,
he'll take you.
Yeah, that makes me a little nervous. Where are we going? Peru, Bolivia, Costa Rica?
I don't know. Okay. Costa Rica, but
that I feel like...
But he survived and come back 3 or 4 times.
I know. So have other people. But my favorite comedian, I already mentioned him once, Neil Brennan, lifelong atheist, does ayahuasca, believes in God now. And I swear to God. I mean, not like in capital G-O-D, not the Catholic faith, God. Right. But this connection between everybody and or whatever, some sort of higher power or something like that. And it's been pretty unbelievable because I've listened to his podcast for a long time, and to hear him experience this growth and other people as well. that freaks me out a little bit. You know, I'm not an illicit drug kind of person. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have Watson Pharmaceuticals in Corona, California, making my Vicodin for me with their high quality standards. So I'm going to do ketamine. And so there's these ketamine clinics around that do IV ketamine. Yep. It's a 40 to 60 minute treatment. And I wish I could remember which like limbic system it stimulates in the brain, but it actually kind of creates allegedly healing connections in the brain. I'm just willing to try more stuff, you know?
So typically so I know a little bit about this because of my wife's profession as a psychiatrist. So typically ketamine is used for major depressive disorder. So is depression one of the challenges for you?
You know, my therapist has
non-responsive depression.
My therapist has always insisted that I am not depressed, but that it's anxiety, which really takes the really what I have is something called depersonalization, derealization. That's the syndrome I have where there's kind of this break with reality, and it does go into a panic attack because it's like I can't even explain it, but it's like you're not a person anymore. Like you're separated, and you've you almost have to read up about it, and even that doesn't do a great job of it. As a result, kind of whatever I can't remember for the first 10 years of my life. That's clearly, you know, my brain, because I talk to my kids, they remember everything. Most people do some stuff
after 4 or 5.
So there's a wall built up, and I can't get through that, and so now I'm willing to try some other stuff. So it's really not depression as much as it is the PTSD and the anxiety and this depersonalization.
I wish my wife were here right now, because we do ketamine treatment in our practice, but we do Spravato. It's a spray treatment. It's a nasal spray.
It's called Spravato?
Spravato. Oh, yeah. That's so a brand name of it.
That's almost as good as Alginate or Bruxer. Yeah, Bravado and spray. Spravato. Yeah. It sounds like a salad dressing, too.
But maybe if she's free, we're going to have her come to dinner. I'd love for you guys to talk. You know,
tell her to bring some ketamine. I'd like to experience it tonight at the barbecue place. So I want to share that. There's also transcranial, magnets that
TMS
can be used. Yeah.
So we're getting one of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It looks like I'll be flying to North Carolina for all this stuff.
So
can I stay at the retreat if I see your wife?
Yeah, you can stay at the house even. So listen, I think what you're saying and what I've been talking about for a long time, certainly what Josh has been talking about, is this unwritten part of dentistry for sure, and life and people in general, is people aren't willing to share the vulnerable aspects. And what it does, it only creates more and more of an issue for other people, because people like me and you, people that are seen as being successful, as being at the top of the profession from whatever level or aspect that you look at it, we have demons too. We have problems. I suffer from depression. I've been on depression medication, God knows how long at this point. And I come on, and every time I feel bad, I'm like, oh, it's time to take it off. And then sure enough, like a few months later, I'm like, time to get back on. And I think we got to be more open about it. It's okay to have faults.
Right.
It's okay to have these things. Well, and it's important to share.
I can tell you that my speaking career changed when I got honest and started talking about being in remedial operative in dental school. It immediately, as soon as I started telling that story, that's when I started connecting with audiences. And so it's like, well, why would you ever share this, like talk about depression or whatever? But again, it's that same kind of connection. You know, nobody wants to hear stories of us being heroes.
Yeah.
They want to hear about the time we fell down and kind of got back up again. But there is kind of a stigma where you feel like, if I share this on, not the weight loss, but if I share this stuff on social media, what will my staff say? Or what will patients still want to see? Well, the staff knows. Josh has such a great story about that patient not wanting to come back to his practice because Dr. Austin just seems so angry all the time. He's like, he didn't know. He had no awareness that he was so angry. And how were other people picking up on this when he didn't, even know? So it's, to your point, they kind of already know. But it's not like our patients, none of them suffer from this. I mean, it's not like they don't think we can't do dentistry because we're taking this or that because they're taking it too. And it's just the opportunity to share it and unburden yourself. I didn't know you were taking depression medication until you said that today, because happy-go-lucky T-bone. Yeah. But then you tell me about your childhood and I'm laughing, but there's also part of my brain that's going, oh, that's kind of fucked up. That's like, like a, I mean, I'm not saying you got to, you know, I'm not directing abuse charges at your, but some of us are more sensitive than other. I think it's all genetic. I think we're 90% pre-programmed at the factory. I think it's so much nature and a little bit of nurture.
Does that have to do with the recent vaccines that we've taken?
That's, I don't know. I think it was long before that. Yeah. I think it's all in our DNA, and then just trying to get, you know, just one example of like, you know, learning one of the commandments, the fourth commandment is honor thy father and mother no matter what. You know, it's in the Bible, unless you want to have a long life on earth. So basically saying if you don't always look up to and respect your mother and father, you're not going to live very long. It's kind of a threat, you know, which sometimes the church did. But if you had some, you know, trauma, for example, with your parents, it's really difficult to reconcile with this. And, you know, my mom and I, we kind of made up a couple of times, and I thought we had made up towards the end. But, you know, when she was dying of cancer, she refused to see me in the hospital. And when the priest came in and said, is there anybody you need to patch things, you know, up with or anything you want to tell me or God? She was like, no, I'm good. You know, I mean, I don't know that I wasn't there. I don't know how nonchalantly I shouldn't put that emphasis on there. But even at that point, she refused to see me. And, you know, for a long time, I was like, well, that's that. You know, she's gone. And, you know, as time has gone on, I've realized that that it's still like this. You know, I'm reading this book right now by Alice Miller, who talks a lot about, like, childhood traumas. And it's called The Body Never Lies. And it's like you can lie to your brain, but the body doesn't. The body knows. And she questions whether or not you can forgive, like, you know, a trauma like that, and like if that's going to be therapeutic or not, or if you have to do this other work. So I'm 56. What am I waiting for to be as happy or as content as I could be without worrying about, without having this anxiety and without having, you know, these panic attacks
self-doubt,
and stuff like that.
All these things.
That, I'm not good enough or, you know.
And that's amazing for people probably to hear that, right? That I have self-doubt on a daily basis sometimes. You know, and well, why is this company not working with me anymore? Why did they? Like, it's so bad sometimes. Like, wait, am I the second choice, third choice, or fourth choice? Because I can't be the first choice. And if I am the first choice, why am I the first choice? Because this product isn't good and I'm going to be the... I mean,
long did your high last after DS World 2019? So you do this amazing case. Yeah. It turns out well.
A few days.
Was it like 2 or 3 days later where you're going, what's next? That wasn't enough to fill the hole, right?
It was almost a letdown after 2 or 3 days. And like, how do I... Like, how do I go
back?
With
the high point
how
of
do
life?
I go back to my practice and not listen have to a people lady high-fiving about her. Me all over the... You know, all of my... Yeah,
all hail T-Bone, right?
And I think... I wish people would talk more about it. I have a I have a passenger seat, due to my wife's practice. There's a lot of stuff going on with people, from substance abuse to depression to people having to be stuck at home with each other that don't want to be stuck at home with each other. There's all kinds of stuff going on out there. And I think we need more people telling people it's okay to be not perfect. And that's one of my missions in what I do, is to be the darkest transparent person in dentistry.
Right.
And to share these things, to share that, you know, we make mistakes, to share that we have self-doubt, to share that, you know, we're not feeling like we're achieving, or to share all of these things, to share that I'm on. Like, I remember I have a very good friend within the industry that's also done very well. And I remember the first time I was talking about depression publicly, he looked at me and said, why would you share that? I'm like, because it's the reality. I'll bet you, and I'm making this up, I bet you a quarter of all dental people are on some type of mental health medication of some sort or another. And it's just, and that's not unique to dentistry.
No.
That's mankind. And I want to make it non-stigmatized. Growing up in the Indian culture, mental health conditions were stigmatized like nothing else. You know, absolutely stigmatized. And growing up in our Indian culture, you didn't talk about sexuality.
Right.
You didn't talk about, like, I remember even, like, almost even to this day, as a 45-year-old married man with three kids, if a kissing scene comes on TV and I'm with my parents, like, I will change the channel.
Die for the remote before those lips touch.
Yeah, and look, I respect my wife so much. And this was an embarrassing blog that she wrote. And she's trying to also help people. She wrote a blog recently about growing up Indian and the lack of transparency of sexuality or sex or whatever it is and how that's affected our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly didn't love seeing that in print.
Where was it in print? Like on her website?
On her website, yeah. I'll send you the article so you can make fun of me. But it's an important message.
Of course, right.
Because we're on earth to impact people. I firmly believe that my gift is to help others see themselves as normal.
Well, and the thing is, I don't know if you would agree with this, but the only thing that fills the hole, like one of the high moments for me was the Richard Branson interview, mm-hmm. Because I prepped for it and I was just in the moment and had good responses with him and it was great. And, a couple days later, mm-hmm. it's gone. But the only thing that kind of helps is when you get an email from a dentist who says, hey, that prep technique you showed me has really helped me out. So it is helping someone else. And that's why you would tell that story, because ultimately when you can be of service to those around you, whether it's your community or if your community's dentistry, to share that you have this,
right.
And get rid of some of the shame on their part and be able to talk about it and have a conversation. If it helps a couple of other people, that ultimately, I think, is what, at least for me, gets me out of my head and just like going over and over and over this stuff in my own head. It gets me out of there. And that's the answer to the question, why would you talk about this stuff? It's because, we have a privilege as speakers. And of course, there is time where we're delivering clinical content. But the goal should not be to stand up and look as good as we can in front of people. It should be to kind of be our authentic selves and be able to share some of that. Now, okay, straight clinical lecture, I get that, but that's not your lane and my lane. You know, we definitely try to keep people entertained at the same time, which is, again, is kind of us kind of, making ourselves.
Self-deprecating.
Getting self-worth through self-deprecation. But I absolutely, I hear what you're saying. And that's why I'm putting it out here that I'm going to start doing this on Instagram. Yeah. Of course, I got to talk to my daughter or somebody about, should this be Instagram stories or reels or all this ridiculous stuff? I frankly just want to create content and give it to somebody and say, you get to send to the world. I'll just create the stuff.
Well, really, if you were smart, you'd do the Gary Vee approach and just have somebody follow you around all day long and document everything for you and then just close your eyes and just let them do their thing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, like, I'm openly looking for someone to do it because I'll create it and I'll put stuff.
Well, it's interesting you bring it up because we had talked about it at the retreat the other night. I bought the website skinnytbone.com.
Did you really?
Yeah. So I have that and I will join you in this gamification.
Well, that's why I'm calling I got to start the Instagram account tonight on the way to the restaurant, but I'm going to call it Mike Totola is losing it because it's about the weight, but it's also about mentally, how I feel and how this is getting more so as I get older. It's not getting better. Kind of like any dental disease, periodontal disease or caries, ignoring it for decades, probably going to make it worse.
Yeah.
And so as this creeps up, it's kind of like, what am I waiting? Okay. So I've been doing the talk therapy and it's helpful, but it's time to look at some more radical, some alternatives that it's like, well, how would this party drug ever work? But you look it up online and you see that people have bad results.
A lot of the
PTSD.
Research was done here at Duke University.
Was it really?
Yeah. So I want to make sure that find out where Mona is and we can talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to try MDMA therapy too. Yeah. There's this group MAPS that's getting pretty close in their FDA studies to helping that too. And it is really weird how psychedelic drugs, mm-hmm. which I've always been terrified of, because when I smoked pot for the first time was the first time I had that depersonalization, mm-hmm. derealization. So this was at the age of 13. This was in eighth grade. And we get high, me and my stupid friends. I'm assuming it was weed and not PCP laced, but we started getting high. And all of a sudden I'm like, I'm not here. And I'm freaking out like I'm psychotic. And then I smoked weed two more times with them like an idiot. And it happened each time. I heard a singer talk about it once. I can't remember if it was Jacob Dylan or Adam George for Counting Crows, or it might have been Chris Cornell. But another person who talked about having these insane reactions to marijuana, these insane panic attacks and this depersonalization. And so I've always been scared of kind of mind, not that even marijuana is a mind-altering drug, but of psychedelics. I've always been terrified of these things. And so it's kind of begrudgingly that I've come to the point that, you know, it's going to be okay. Because at one point, I did abuse nitrous so bad. Had it cranked up to 70%, back in the old dark days where I'm just sitting alone at the office on the weekend. Nasal mask, are you kidding me? I've got the hose right in my mouth, sucking this down at 70%, watching TV. And weirdly, it was Loveline with Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew, and I'd later get to be on Adam Carolla's podcast. Show, yeah. But I was hallucinating so much, I looked in the hallway and the walls were slanted and the paint was melting down the walls. And they were talking to me, Adam and Dr. Drew were like, hey, Mike. And I was just like, so I should have, so I don't think a psychedelic experience would break my brain. I think I've just been afraid to really step into, because I've tried EMDR and other stuff to kind of get to what's going on in those first 10 years and nothing's worked yet. So that's why I'm like, my brain's already broken. What am I talking about? It's to a certain extent. You know what I mean when I say it's broken. There's something going on in there that talk alone won't help. There could be some chemical that would help. And so I've just finally gotten to the point where I'm ready to do it and ready to share it and kind of be an open book. And I remember a therapist saying a long time ago, one day you're going to talk about this and it's going to help a lot. You're going to talk about this on stage. It's going to help a lot of people. And I was like, fat chance there. I don't want to lose gigs because of whatever this or that. But I'm finally at that point.
It's a different world.
Right.
We've proven ourselves. And
that was like 18 years ago that you said that.
So I did look up your first speaking clip. But Mike, let's get to dinner. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome, man. That was great.
Thank you for being open.
Yeah, you too, man.
Yeah, I think that's our gift. Our gift is to be open, to help people change their lives and to let people know it's okay to fail and there are better days ahead. So
and maybe one day we put together some sort of mental dental program here at the summit.
Listen.
Where it's you and I really going deep, because I've only scraped the surface on some of my bad stories.
Sure. We've got an entire team of people that can do that. From therapists,
and Mona, or whoever comes in, and
I will happily and would love to do. Even if we don't even if we just get people together to talk about it, so that they can feel better about it, that would be awesome, and we can live stream it. Maybe more other people can tune in and watch and share stories.
And once again, just like you did these past 2 days, every dentist you help. You help their 3,000 patients at the same time. So it's got this much bigger
butterfly effect.
And, we always hear about Dennis in there. Your consultant was here, Holly, and was talking about a dentist she knew that committed suicide. And having to sell that practice. And she knows a lot of these stories from her interactions, which are mainly not talked about unless you're in the business of having to sell a practice like that. Because otherwise, won't make CNN, won't be on the cover of Dentistry Today. It's this kind of shame
secret. But those magazines should put it on the cover. That should be our challenge to them, to make it not taboo to talk about these things.
Right.
And that should be our goal. All right, everybody, thank you guys so much. Mike, thank you so much.
That was awesome.
It was great, and we'll see you guys next week.